This is a Dynamike Network podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to another week of the Max Destruction Podcast. I am your favorite co-host, Dustin, and with me is a very bundled up, cold-looking kid.
Yes, of course. I am in what amounts to be like Ken's circle of hell, really. I absolutely hate the cold, and I am up here in Wisconsin, so this is really just a cruel joke. That I'm reasonably certain Dustin played. So one good show, old boy. And also I feel like whoever really lived up here and decided this was a great place to settle, you're hardcore. I'll just say that. You're a hardcore human being, and my hat's off to you.
Yeah. It snowed here today too, so it was a little cold, but I feel like Wisconsin's worse, so. Anyways, we got a fun podcast lined up today. I'm super excited. It's going to be a really, really fun show. Man, I am drawing a blank. So much has been going on today. Let's have, Geo explain what we're about.
This is awesome, and this is totally staying in. All right, so we also have Geo with us. Geo? Nah, I'm just playing. It'd be awesome if that was Geo, though. This is real Geo.
Yes, I am here, you assholes. At this point, I think my deli is way more popular than either of you folks. Destruction Deli specializes in cold cuts and insightful collateral damage assessments.
I think he's right. Like, I'm going to be honest. I kind of feel like his deli has grown into more of a popular thing than us, Dustin.
Yeah, I think so too. But I did hear that, this podcast has hit like the best in the Milky Way ever since the Jedi Council found out that Luke got the curb stomped. So, I don't know. He's going to have to start branching out and through the galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, franchising does happen. And with Elon, anything is possible, of course. There is a real possibility we do, in fact, get a destruction deli on the moon. And I, for one, am here for it.
Yeah, me too. Mars branch, Jupiter branch, you're never mind. Anyways,
he's going to say it. He was going to say the second grade joke. It was great.
Well, I came up with a very fun wham last week, I think.
Wham.
Yes, that is right. I gave probably the sexiest character I think we've ever had so far, and that is Jim Carrey's Grinch. And Ken, what answers do we get this week?
So first off, I want to 100% agree with you. Gotta love you some green base lid base paint on Jim Carrey, which honestly, I don't even think they put any prosthetics on him. Reasonably certain that's just his face. So yes, we did get a lot of great answers. Some of them were kind of repeats from last week, but that's kind of to be expected with the way we've been rolling these holiday-based whams. But first we had Joe Garcia, friend of the program, of course. David Harbour's Santa Claus from Violent Night. Now, of course, that was from last year and has quickly become a favorite of mine because it is both traditional Christmas with just sparkling of John Wick ultraviolence. We have the Santa Claus from the movie The Santa Claus. So, of course, Scott Calvin making another entrance. Joe also dropped Jack Skellington as the other guy that tried to steal Christmas. Friend of the podcast and also fellow member of the Dynamike Network, Zach, dropping the Jack Frost. Now, the question back to you, Zach, is this the Michael Keaton Jack Frost? Is this the Chris Pine Rise of the Guardians Jack Frost? Or my personal favorite, the 1993 Killer Snowman Jack Frost? And you know what I'm talking about, all you individuals that were really into VHS horror back in the day. Scott Camacho coming in hot, of course, with Harry from Harry and the Hendersons. Solid pick. And also Oscar the Grouch. I kind of feel like that was a color-based pick. So do better. Do better, Scott. And then finally, our resident serial killer, and that's a great homage to what we're about to talk to about, is Cat in the Hat. With my favorite scene in the film with the gif of "I'll get you and I'll make it a bloody accident." Of course, he was riffing off of himself in an infomercial. Solid picks all.
Yeah, I honestly really love the Cat in the Hat one. I think that would be fantastic. I think, that's got to be my favorite. And Jack Frost, I want the Michael Keaton one just because he's funny, but I don't see how he would win in a fight.
Well, I mean, he would heal all wounds, you know, with the power of music, because of course he played a mean mouth harp in that film. That's right, folks. I used the harmonica joke.
That was a great harmonica joke. You know, that's how we know this podcast is getting to the level of class that it deserves. You're high class comedy here.
It's highbrow, really. I've been compared to Frasier in some instances. So we definitely are tall and are smart and enjoy the finer things. Like Frasier likes the opera and fine wine, and I enjoy John Wick movies and beer. I mean, it's like we're twins.
Same thing. Perfect. All right. Well, I think we should kind of get into what today's episode is all about, and that is the ultimate Trap Master Battle Royale, like the best fight we could ever come up with, I think. And I will be representing an 8-year-old called Kevin McAllister from Home Alone, and you got some diseased old psychopath called Jigsaw.
Yeah, folks, I mean, realistically, we were trying to think of the most wholesome holiday-related matchup for Kevin McAllister. And honestly, it is holiday-related, gish. I mean, you could really kind of hang your hat on that question mark that I threw in there. The Jigsaw movies tend to come out during Halloween. So, again, holiday-related? Wholesome? Yes, possibly, from a certain point of view. I mean, he really is all about life in the end.
Yeah.
And there are morals. I got nothing else. This is going to be a train wreck of a fight, and I can't wait. I am a connoisseur of horror films. I am not going to lie to the audience. I have not watched all the Saws because around 4 is when I kind of lost interest because the story kind of ended and it just really became about how to one up buckets of blood. And not since Quentin Tarantino really got into feet that I just kind of like lost interest.
Yeah. And, I may have watched some horror movies back in my younger days, but I have not for a long time. So I can't even tell you how far I think I may have watched up to Saw 3.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, those were solid.
Yeah. I think that's about as far as I ever made it. But Home Alone, I watched both of those ones with Kevin McAllister and even 2 of the ones after it. So, you know, and out of us, you know, you're the old man, I'm the younger guy. So I think we got like perfectly matched up with who we're representing today.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I definitely enjoy setting up torture porn basements. like really get against the guys that slighted me. So
I just want you to know you're the villain today.
Am I not always the villain?
You're trying to kill an 8-year-old.
I mean, he wasn't 8 in the second one. And honestly, kind of a dick.
Troubled youth.
Yeah, okay. Tomato, tomato.
Tomato, tomato. Potato, potato. All right, anyways, that out of the way, we like to do something here called Tale of the Cocoa Butter. And here we have
the Max Destruction podcast, and at the Destruction Deli, we use the Tale of the Cocoa Butter as a measuring device. Think about it like the UFC's Tale of the Tape. The guys explain their characters' backgrounds, abilities, and equipment. And I use it to measure how many cannoli a person deserves. It's way more macho and 80s action than a stupid standard of measurement, don't you think?
Gio understood that you've been doing nothing but sarcastically talking shit about him. So he wanted to jump on you. That's really all that was.
Yeah, it wasn't you pushing buttons early. Okay, anyway, that's the tale of the cocoa butter. And Ken, who goes first today?
Today would be me. So why don't you sit your whippersnapper ass back and let the old man at the job. So, of course, yes, as Dustin so artfully put it, I am the villain in today's episode, which, of course, really, aren't we all villains? I mean, we all in some way are bad guys. In other ways, you know, we're all heroes. So what is a hero? This is the question that we'll seek to answer today. Of course, probably not with my character, but, you know, I'll give it a shot. All right. So. I have the Jigsaw Killer. His name is actually John Kramer. He is 52, and I guess depending on the weird timeline going on, he's dead, but maybe not dead, because there's, like I said, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. He's artfully portrayed by Toten Bell, a solid actor for this film. I mean, there's been way too many great cameos and deaths in this film, in these films. Tobin Bell plays this to perfection. He is the fictional character from the Saw franchise. He serves as the main antagonist of Saw, Saw 2, Saw 3, and Saw 4, the overarching antagonist of Saw 5, Saw 6, Saw 3D, and secondary antagonist of Jigsaw, a background antagonist of Spiral, and the main protagonist of Saw X. John is overall the main antagonist of the franchise. See, I told you there'd be like heroes involved in here somewhere. And Carrie Ells, because why wouldn't you? So John Kramer was a successful civil engineer and architect. Along with his friend and lawyer, Art Blank, he founded the Urban Renewal Group, a foundation dedicated to the property development of low-income people under the motto, Four Walls, Build a Home. The company bought up abandoned real estate and renovated them into low-cost housing. The first building purchased and fixed up by the group was the Gideon Meatpacking Plant. And at one point of his life, John married a woman named Jill Tuck and supported her at her work at the Homeward Bound Clinic, an ambulant recovery clinic for addicts under the motto "Cherish Your Life." During a party at a clinic sponsored by an insurance company named the Umbrella Health Corporation, where have we heard this word before? He became acquainted with William Easton, Umbrella's manager. As they talked about their work, William presented him with a mathematical formula he had developed to decide which people would get insured by Umbrella and who would not. While William was visibly proud of it, John questioned this business policy because it put William in a position to decide about his client's life or death. According to John, this business practice completely ignored the client's will to live, which he deemed the most crucial element of human nature. However, despite their disagreements, John eventually became a client of Umbrella. Besides his professional career, John's private life took a happier turn in 1994 as he and Jill were expecting their first child, John, who was already meticulously planned for that their son would be born on the Chinese Year of the Pig, which also gave him his name Gideon, inspired by the first building. Sometime later, John obtained a workshop, which he proudly presented to Jill. On this occasion, he also showed her an old clock, which was a part of a deal that he had made. The clock greatly fascinated him because it still worked, even though it was almost 300 years old. As a surprise for Jill, he also presented her two handmade gifts for their son, a child's bed and a wooden ventriloquist puppet. Despite their happiness, John started to worry about Jill's safety, who continued work at the clinic even in the late months of her pregnancy. During an incident at the clinic, John had interrupted a brawl between two patients, and the two of them had gotten into an argument when one of them vociferously complained about the long waiting time, subsequently causing the other to slap him in the face. After being separated from each other, Cecil, one of the bad guys, pulled a knife from his pocket. Therefore, John tried to calm him down, and when Cecil angrily asked him about the reason for his intervention, John merely answered Cecil would soon become a problem for everyone around him due to his reckless behavior. Even though Cecil finally put the knife away, John's worries about Jill's safety would soon be justified. One night, and then the fall of 1994, John sat in his car and waited for Jill outside the clinic when he was approached by a young prostitute who offered him company. However, John declined her offer and told her to go home, and as a beautiful girl like that should not be doing such work. Shortly afterward, he suddenly noticed how one of the bad guys stormed out of the clinic and ran away after he tried to rob Jill. John immediately entered the building and found Jill squatting on the floor after Cecil had accidentally slammed a doorknob into her stomach. Even though he took Jill to the Angel of Mercy Hospital, where one of the nurses immediately took care of them, the doctors could not save the unborn child's life. One of them eventually delivered John the bad news. When John sat at Jill's bed and held her hand, she told him that she only ever wanted to help people at her clinic. John, however, bitterly answered that they could only save themselves. I'll skip forward through the majority of the rest of it, but as you can plainly see, Jill leaves him because he never really gets over the loss of his son, and he really lets that bitterness well up inside him. And then John gets cancer, which case he gets himself put on lists to get bone marrow transplants and then diagnosed with colon cancer. But during an earlier visit to one of the residents made a careless mistake and inadvertently mixed up John's x-rays with that of another patient. Therefore, his cancer had further evolved and was no longer curable by the time of his diagnosis. Thoroughly depressed, John ultimately tried to end his life by driving his car off a cliff. Contrary to his expectations, though, he survived the crash. At this moment, John decided he wanted to live. Severely injured, he crawled out of the wreck and pulled a jagged piece of metal out of his body. Thereby, he realized that he had only learned to cherish his life when his death had been imminent. Because of this, John chose to spend the remaining time of his life testing other people's will to live, hoping that this would convince them to value their own lives and the lives of those around him. However, his newly discovered will to live could not reunite him with Jill and therefore he continued to ignore her attempts to contact him. So he then begins what he calls the tests. John begins to design motivational tools, we'll say, regarding how to make those that have wronged him in the past really strive to awaken their will to live. And a lot of these tend to be overly ridiculously crafted, to include, you know, shotguns on lines. Of course, the reverse bear trap is one of my favorites. And then, of course, you know, a lot of it's them versus you. So you either allow that other person to die so that you can live. Therefore, you know, your will to live has grown stronger than the others, and so on and so forth. So Jigsaw eventually succumbs to his cancer, and then subsequently ends up getting like his throat slit and things like that. With, you know, utilizing a lot of his test subjects that soon become like his wards. He is able to live on basically through their work, which continues on basically to this day, or as long as they intend on continuing these traps, basically. So John Kramer is a psycho. He specializes in traps and in a lot of different civil engineering marvels. Some would say Kevin McAllister would probably look up to this guy in the fact that everything that he does is cold and calculated and is willed solely through one purpose, which is to make people realize their problems and decide for themselves if they want to live or die. So realistically, John never kills anybody. They just do it to themselves. And I'm kind of shocked to see how the 11-year-old boy is going to handle John Kramer Jigsaw.
Masterfully done, as always, Ken. He's going to kill him because, you know, he has that child sense of not realizing that what he's doing could actually kill somebody. And the only reason I'm going to say his villains in Home Alone survive is because of cartoon logic, okay?
Oh, yeah, so, no, 100%. They'd be dead. 100%.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how he's going to win. So let me get into Kevin McAllister. The movies are Home Alone and Home Alone 2. After that, they just started going through random child actors like no other. I put his rank at Child Trap Master. He is a typical kid in a big family. He feels lost within the chaos that is his family. He's looked down on a lot, kind of the troublemaker who causes issues. And then it comes Christmas time, the most wonderful time of the year. The night before they are supposed to leave in the first movie, Kevin accidentally spills all over the table, gets on the pizza and the passports. And in the confusion, as it's getting wiped up, you see his passport go into the trash. That's going to come into play a little later in the movie. And basically he gets in trouble for that issue. So he gets sent up to a room to spend the night alone to think about his actions. There's a power outage later that night that causes all the alarm clocks to reset. This is the 90s, people. Okay. We didn't have cell phones. We had alarm clocks that if the power went out, you didn't wake up unless you were smart enough to actually put batteries along with plugging it into the wall. Yes, we're old. Anyways, everyone wakes up, rushes out the door to make it to the taxi, make their flight, but they forgot little old Kevin. When he wakes up, he realizes everyone is gone and he is home alone. During this time, there happens to be burglars taking advantage of families that are gone for the holidays. And that's where we meet Harry and Marv. Picture like the Three Stooges minus one. That's Harry and Marv to a T. One night, Kevin gets scared and catches on to the fact that there's someone trying to break in. They get scared hearing the TV, thinking the family is home, so they leave. This is when Kevin leaps into action, but no adults believe him. No cops, no nothing, nobody. No one seems to believe this kid that there are bad people about. They question where his family is. He panics and he runs away. So he takes matters into his own hands and builds a very impressive set of traps throughout the house. For someone his age, like, holy crap. Like, I love my kids, but they can barely pour milk into their own cereal. So I don't know how he does it at the age of 8. Skip ahead a little bit to Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. This is, again, a situation where they are going out of town for the holidays. This time they are going to Miami, but they oversleep again. They didn't learn their lesson the first time. This time, Kevin is with them. But while they are walking through the airport, Kevin is holding his dad's wallet. All of a sudden, he gets separated and somehow manages to get onto a flight to New York instead of the flight to Miami and gets separated from his family. He lands in New York, and just as a weird twist of fate, the Wet Bandits, yeah, that's right, Harry and Marv are back, known as the Wet Bandits now, have escaped from prison and are in New York. Later, Kevin goes to a toy store and donates some money for charity, and that is when the shopkeeper gives him these really cute, like, little ceramic turtle doves and tells him to give the second one to someone special. That's when he runs into the Wet Bandits, and although they catch him, Kevin is able to trick a woman into thinking that the bandits inappropriately touched her, so she punches them, and that's his opening to escape. He manages to find his Uncle Rob's townhouse, only to find it in renovation and vacant for the week. So he decides, what he always does, to set some traps. He encounters a homeless lady twice in this movie, and on the second time, he hears her story of how she lost her husband, all this sad stuff. So he feels bad, gives her one of the turtle doves, and he decides that he has to do the right thing and stop Harry and Marv because he knows that they're going to try to steal from that toy store that has been raising donations for kids. So he sets up his traps, and then to lure Harry and Marv to the townhouse, he takes a photo of them attempting to break into the store and then smashes the window to get the alarm to go off and runs away. They get the crap beat out of them in both of these movies. The traps are absolutely ridiculous. And the end of the movie, they actually catch him in Central Park, I believe. But the homeless crazy pigeon lady throws birdseed all over them to stop them. And that is basically what happens throughout both Home Alones. I try to get through it fast because if not, I could go on for hours on them because I love these movies. For his skills and weapons, I put, you know, Kevin, I would say he's like a genius level intellect for an 8-year-old to be able to come up with all this stuff. He's able to develop and set traps at a quick rate. He outsmarts two burglars. Granted, they are really dumb. He's small and quick on his feet, something Jigsaw is not. He uses a barrage of traps to stop his opponents, such as, but not limited to, paint buckets, bricks, ice, flamethrowers, electricity, oil, and much, much more. How Kevin wins this fight is he will outsmart Jigsaw with just how kind of simple and childlike his traps are. And he's also smaller and much, much quicker than the old dying dude.
So I'm not going to lie. A lot of that time I was just thinking to myself, what about the children? Like every time you're talking about Kevin doing Kevin things. There's a few holes of course that, you know, were left out. You know, the fact that you didn't even talk about the talk boy really hurt my heart. I owned one of those. That was outstanding. It definitely didn't work the way it did in Home Alone 2. But also, because it's kind of prevalent, I don't know if there's a lot of people in our audience that remember going to the airport pre-9/11,
but oh, I know.
Yeah, you could basically walk onto any plane that you wanted to once you got past like the little ticket desk. Like security used to be like, are you going to blow something up? No. Okay. Go on in. I mean, like, oh, you got a ticket? Like, yes. And they're like, that's fine. Just go right on ahead. So it wasn't as far-fetched as people really thought about. I mean, like the first movie, a little bit more, but like you're sitting there thinking to yourself, 1991 is when Home Alone 2 came out. It was pretty plausible. You could probably get anywhere in the world just by like saying, yeah, I'm supposed to be on this plane. So
yeah.
Solid as usual. However, I will say, while a lot of his traps would have killed the normal human being, none of his traps were set up to do so. Whereas Jigsaw's, that's pretty much all they're set up to do, there's a way out. There's always a way. It usually consists of doing something horrifying. So kind of curious how Non-Lethal Boy is going to stack up, but I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah, so I think it's time now we have Gio explain how we do this.
Do you honestly think these idiots would be able to put their biases aside to come up with an answer to who would win? Absolutely not. So they did the next best thing. They stole a probabilistic model that a computer can use from the dynamic Duel Jamooks. Using this model, the guys input a character's stats, such as strength, fighting style, and most importantly, humor. They run the model 1,000 times to decide a match. But think about listening to a computer do anything. It's stupid boring. So instead, the guys end up simulating a fight in an environment that will undoubtedly put my fifth generation establishment in harm's way. The simulated fight doesn't have any bearing on the results, but I guess to some it's funnier.
I mean, it is.
It's hilarious.
So Dustin, this is a quandary, a pickle, if you will, on how these two would fight in our simulated fight. And I've been racking my brain on it, and I've come up with a solution. So instead of these two being put into an environment and then saying go, because both of these guys are like Batman, they need like time for prep and all that. But unlike Batman, they can't prep for everything. I don't know. It's a whole thing. So what we'll do is we'll say that Jigsaw and Kevin respectively have to go through each other's houses of horrors. Jigsaw is trying to get through Kevin's house of horrors because Kevin somehow got a hold of the cure for cancer and, you know, was able to resurrect his kid. Obviously, suspending belief of the fact that Jigsaw would, in fact, do any of that regardless. Whereas Kevin's going to have to go through Jigsaw's house of horrors to get to his family minus Buzz because nobody liked Buzz. Nope. And Uncle Frank. And Uncle Frank was the first one to go.
Fair. I think that is totally fair. And I am super excited.
Yeah, as well am I. So in that spirit, here's what I would say. We will say that Kevin will go first, and Kevin will go through a house of horrors that I come up with. And then Jigsaw will then go afterwards. Good enough?
Yeah, good enough.
Okay, so set, Kevin is outside of a storage facility. Because why not have Kevin in front of a storage facility at 11 years old? I mean, he did kind of walk through really seedy neighborhoods in New York City. So, we'll say this is like the most entirely possible part of this entire thing.
All right. So obviously he knows that his family is in there and he has to do something to get him out. But this is a kid that's used to like trying to not get in trouble. So I don't believe he will go through the front door. He is going to search for a window to crawl through.
Okay. So as Kevin's crawling through a window, we'll say there's a window in a store. How many windows do you see in a storage building? Whatever, Dustin. Questions about your how many times you frequent a storage facility. Yeah, it's fair. There's like two storage like buildings itself and a mule. So Kevin's crawling through a window, okay? And as Kevin comes into the building, he comes into a room. Like there's a couple of doors, but it's just kind of a blank room. Then out of the corner of his eye, he sees a puppet on a tricycle, like coming in, and Kevin, you know, sees this puppet and the puppet like rides up to Kevin. Hello, young McAllister. Would you like to play a game? In this, there are two options. You can go to the left door, which is back out the way you came. I'm not real sure why you came through the window, or the door on the right where your family is kept, and they're all trying to figure out whether or not they have the will to see you live. Your choice, of course, Kevin. Enjoy.
So Kevin's going to be freaked out because he is a child, and first off, he's going to run up and just punt that flipping doll out of there. And then I guess he'll have to go through the door because he has to save his family, so he goes through the door.
So as Kevin punted the doll, Jigsaw knew this was going to happen because why wouldn't you punt? That was the one thing I never really understood. This is a tangent. But as you see this puppet, you would want to punt it. Immediately you would. So as Kevin punts it, he actually sets off a mechanism so that as Kevin's opening up the door, a dart flies in and pops Kevin in the side of the neck. And a recording goes off, says, "Well done, Kevin. You've started the game early. You now have 30 minutes to live."
Okay, so Kevin at this point knows he screwed up, and he's just gonna roll with it, and he's just gonna keep walking and pull the dart out of his neck, keeping it for in case he needs it later.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you keep it? Anyways, Dustin. So
he does that. He's a kid.
So Kevin goes through the door, he sees that there are two aquarium-sized, like, fish bowls. And in the fish bowl, there is a water that's just dripping in, and it's kind of moving pretty quickly. And in between the two fish bowls, they're covered with a sheet. There is a scale, and then there is a 5-gallon bucket and then a 3-gallon bucket. And then as Kevin walks in, the cloaks come off, and then it's going to be his dad and one of his sisters, in which case the recording's going to come on and say, "Hey, okay, Kevin, your first test. Can you put 4 gallons of water in the 5-gallon bucket? You have 1 minute, Kevin."
Sure. So he pours water into the bucket.
Okay, so at the end of the episode, folks, I will explain to you how this worked. Obviously, Jigsaw did a little bit more research than just getting pummeled in the face with paint cans, as I'm sure Dustin's going to put Jigsaw through. So anyways, okay, we'll say Kevin figures it out because he's super smart or whatever. Sure. But at that time, when he puts the 5-gallon bucket in, his dad is going to drop through a trap door. And the recording is going to say, "Well, Kevin, I don't think you really understand the gravity of the situation." In which time, another door unlocks and swings open next to the fishbowl.
Okay, so he's going to be a little sad about his dad, but let's face it, he only really liked his mom in those movies. So he's going to just be like kind of shrug and be like, "Well, better luck next time." And he's just going to walk through the next door.
He doesn't even say anything to his sister. That's kind of messed up.
Yeah, he didn't like any of his families, his siblings. They all sucked.
I mean, truthfully, they were kind of just one-note characters. Anyways, So Kevin's going to walk into the next door, and he's going to find that his dad is actually dangling from a whole bunch of wires, and they seem to be electrified. Right next to his dad is going to be a knife switch, like an on-off, like old-timey knife switch. But attached to the knife switch is a picture of his mom, and it's going to say "lives or dies" on top or bottom. And the audio is going to say, "Okay, Kevin, this is your choice. Whether or not your father lives or your mother lives is up to you."
Okay, and he's going to flip the switch, killing his father, because, again, he only really loved his mom.
Hi, Dad. I mean, you were like... I mean, in all seriousness, his dad was definitely like mob boss material, because who can afford a house in Chicago like that? And his dad has an entire townhome in like Upper West Side townhome in New York City. Like, he had like a fence and a backyard kind of looking thing. Again, long story short. So his dad ends up dying. And then one final door opens, and it's his mom, and she's just sitting in a chair by herself, single light shining on her. What does Kevin do?
He's going to be excited, obviously, and I'm just playing fully into how I feel Kevin would react, and he's just going to run to his mom and say how he missed her.
And at that exact moment in time, Kevin's going to depress a steel plate in the floor, launching him straight into the wall, killing him. And that's the end of the match.
Okay. Yeah,
I didn't think that was going to go well,
I did not expect that last one. Yeah. Out of all of the Jigsaw traps, a metal plate smashing a child into the wall was the least gruesome you could have done.
Well, I mean, it is a kid.
You're not a
barbarian. I'm really not. No. And the fact that Acme Industries was written on the bottom of the steel plate, I thought was funny. You know, like Wile E. Coyote, right? That was funny. I feel dirty now. This is a bad idea.
Possibly dies from being ejected into a wall and splattered.
Or like dies from the injection in his neck. Or he said, "This is just a terrible idea. I feel horrible.
This is horrible. Like, I want to preface. I just want to tell everybody that this was Ken's idea. Okay,
100%. And really, we can blame the science on this one. Okay, so now it's Jigsaw's turn.
All right, so Jigsaw is standing outside of a 2-story townhome with a basement.
Okay, so Jigsaw knows that his cure is in the house somewhere. He's done his research on like who built the house and a bunch of extra research he really didn't need, because this is like some random Chicago family and he was dropped off by John Candy in a polka costume. So Jigsaw is just going to walk up to the front door and open it.
Well, he thinks he's going to open it, but before he gets to the front door, there's ice on the bottom because someone sprayed a water hose all over the ground. And let's face it, we're in December. You're wearing a beanie. There's ice. And he's going to fall and crack his head open.
Wow, that ended the match quickly. He's an old man. But we'll say that he's spry. So he's going to hit the ground like cursing winter and like thinking of how he's going to like mess up the dude that was supposed to do the drainage off of the stairs, because everybody knows you don't just allow water to pool on this top step. You actually want it to have a slight slope so that the water drains off, so you don't have this problem. But fine, whatever, John Hughes. So he's going to kind of get himself back up. And he's going to open the door, like shaking himself off.
And that is when the door handle was actually attached to two wires and he gets electrocuted.
Okay. Again, he's like a 75-year-old man on dialysis and he's got cancer and tumors. So he gets electrocuted. But he's like dealt with a whole bunch in his past. So we'll say that the electrocution happens, but it's not really that bad because he's wearing those old people shoes that have like the really good arch support and a lot of rubber.
And an 11-year-old set the strap up, so it probably wasn't high voltage electricity.
It's fair. So, yeah. So he's like, ooh, that kind of tickles, and then just opens the door.
Okay. And as he comes in, there is a big opening. The house looks mostly empty, and then you have the stairs right in front of you, the kitchen off to your right, and the living room to the left.
Okay, so because it's a kid that he is going up against, he is going to assume that, like all kids, they would run and hide in their parents' bedroom. And because that this house is situated the way that it is, he is going to go around the gaping hole that's in the floor in front of him and then not step on any rugs because he's not an idiot. And then he's going to kind of crouch and slowly make his way up the stairs, but not straight up and down because, again, he's not an idiot.
Okay, so he's going to obviously step on some fishing line on the stairs. And in comes the paint buckets, and they go over his head because he's crouching. But as we know, McAllister goes for low blows, so there's going to be one paint can that's a little lower than normal, smacking Jigsaw in the face.
You think it's smacking him in the face, but it's really smacking the steel plate that he's got on the side of his head, which is great because it replaced the plastic one because it really messed up his hair the way it was situated. And we all know Jigsaw is all about vanity. So it hits the plate on his head. It rings the bell a little, not going to lie, but it's deflected enough that Jigsaw now kind of understands like the trajectory of how everything is going. And then he's able to scale the rest of the stairs with little to no problem, as he's now fully aware of like the drop tricks and like the lines and all that.
Okay, so you're up at the top of the stairs. You see a long hallway with four doors all shut. Pick your room.
So based on the way that the house is situated, he is going to assume that the door closest to the stairwell is probably not the parents, probably a little bit further on because that's how most master bedrooms are set. So he is going to go and he's going to kick in the first door, but not stand right in front of it. He's just going to kick it in and see what happens.
Okay. Good idea, because just then a bookcase fell over and smashed the door.
Yes. So Jigsaw's feeling pretty good about himself. Like, again, he's used to like taking his own will to live and making it the maximum. So he is then going to walk to the next door, rapping on the walls as he goes in his creepy voice, like, "Hello, Kevin. Hello." Trying to really scare the 11-year-old, because that's what you do in this situation. You don't like putz around like idiot Marv. So he then kicks in the next door, feeling like it's probably not going to happen again, that there's not necessarily that many bookcases around.
Right. Yeah. And he just kicked in the door to the bathroom, and with the curtain shut to the tub, it says, "Your cure is close by. Come here."
Well, he's not going to go into the bathroom. He's going to read that and know that it's a kid. He's not that smart. So he is going to then go to the next room, which he's reasonably certain is the master, in which he's going to open it and let it just like creakily crack open and move. But instead of like being on his feet, he's actually like low crawling, like doing a weird, like shifty snake thing to evade anything that's going above his head.
Okay, that would be good, except for you just released a remote control car shooting flames off of a hairspray bottle. And it is coming at him as he's down on the ground, this decrepit old man, unable to dodge out of the way.
Somehow this is worse than like what Jigsaw did to Kevin. Like,
somehow.
I'm just picturing an old man that's now set ablaze by a remote control car. And like having Kevin in the background laughing like in the movie. That's somehow worse. All right. I think we're done with this spec. Like, I'd like to be able to sleep tonight. Yeah. Okay. So Jigsaw just dies. We'll just say he dies.
He got caught on fire, ran out the room, slipped on some oil, and fell off of the banister.
Sounds great. Yeah. We'll Perfect. Go with that. it's not often that you get both of us to go, "Wow, that was weird."
That was very weird, but kind of fun.
Okay, so before we get to the results, of course, Dustin, we should probably let Gio talk about the destruction spectrum. In this case, I think maybe thermonuclear would be close, but we'll let Gio decide.
The destruction spectrum, or as I like to call it, the insurance adjuster's notes, the guys take each character's destruction potential and decide on a scale of 1 to 5. Really, it's all about how much damage they do to my deli. Since you guys think it's hilarious, I guess I'll just keep switching insurance companies. There is certain to be a ton in New York, right?
Nope. There's only a few. And you're running out.
Well, maybe on Mars.
Maybe on Mars. So, I agree with you. I feel like this one's going to be higher just because, like, it's a lot of traps involved. And also, when you have an 11-year-old kid messing with wiring and homemade flamethrowers, there's a solid chance that while Jigsaw is in that building, the whole place catches on fire and burns to the ground.
It's definitely not coded right. I'll say that. It's very unlikely, you know, that Kevin really studied civil engineering. So, yeah, I mean, the way Jigsaw would probably array the place, it would go up in flames as it would. Kevin's literally just throwing gas on the fire at this point. So I'm going to go like a 4.5.
I think that's solid. I like that.
All right. So the results, Dustin, drum roll, if you please. Wow, Dustin, that was incredible.
All right, so the
results of our match, it really wasn't even close. Kevin McAllister with the wind, as probably required in this situation.
Can't kill
716 to Jigsaw's 284. So 71% of the time, Kevin McAllister definitely wins. And that's realistically because as the younger person, he was able to have a leg up on 90% of the stats. His movement was a little bit faster. He was a little bit more evasive, definitely more durable because like a stiff wind would knock Jigsaw over.
I'm pretty sure he died on the porch steps slipping on that ice.
Yeah, very likely. Or at the very least broke a hip, right? I did give the edge, of course, to Jigsaw on fighting skill. And also a little bit more versatile with the fact that, I mean, there's been 10 movies and like he comes up with some really crazy shit. Yeah. So I'm glad this match is over. I mean, it was kind of fun to like really think of like how this was all going to plan out. And I'm glad that this isn't really happening. But yeah, good stuff.
It's not the movie we need. We do not need Kevin McAllister versus Jigsaw the movie.
Especially considering they seem to be making a lot of these weird, like Winnie the Pooh and like there's going to do like a Bambi. It's very weird stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So this week's Wham. So I've been thinking long and hard about this because I kind of want to continue on with the holiday theme. But at the same time, I also had other ideas as to what we should do. But because it is holiday, I'm going to go with Oogie Boogie from Nightmare Before Christmas. So that will be this week's Wham to continue on our holiday, but kind of also on the creepy side. I feel like it really kind of matches up with what we were trying to do this week. So for those of you that are curious, go ahead and go on our Instagram, our Twitter, our Gmail. Also, we still read our Q&A responses on our podcast, so please continue doing that as well. And Dustin, before we get out of here, I think it's time to unveil our very first movie review for this season.
Yes, I am super excited because I got to choose this. And I felt with this being me and Ken's first Christmas podcasting together, we have to go with both of our favorite, you know, Christmas movie, and that will be Die Hard.
Yes, it is a long time coming, and outstanding choice as usual. And that leads into the bonus footage of how you solve the 3 5-gallon water challenge. So what you do is you fill up the 3-gallon water jug, then you pour said 3-gallon water jug into the 5-gallon bucket, leaving how much water left in the 5-gallon jug? 2 gallons worth. So you have an empty bucket with 3 gallons, and then you have the 5-gallon jug. Then you take the 3-gallon jug, and then you refill it all the way, and then you fill up the rest of the 5-gallon jug. If that is in fact the case, how many gallons do you have left in the 3-gallon after you've filled it up? 1 gallon of water. So you pour out the 5-gallon jug, you put the 1 gallon of water from the 3-gallon into the 5-gallon, then you refill the 3-gallon, and put it in the 5-gallon jug, you have 4 gallons. Suck it.
Impressive. I paid attention to most of that.
You didn't, but I'm glad that somebody will, and whoever makes it to the end of this episode definitely deserves that bonus. Also, before we get out of here, folks, we will not be doing a pod for the week of Christmas because, of course, myself and Dustin, that is family time. So the week of the 28th, there will not be a podcast. So you will have one podcast the week before, but they will not be for the week of. And finally, in honor of that, I will be releasing another Grinding of the Gears. That's Ooh. Right. Ken will be dropping another rant for that. I can't wait. And that is as much a spoiler as you will be getting. Dustin, before we get out of here, you have anything else?
I think I won the last. Is it the last 2 or 3 in a row? I feel like season 2 has been all up and I feel bad for you a little bit, but not really. But I'm going to say it because I'm going to pretend to be a good guy.
Yeah, thanks. He's welcome. Really been the hero of this episode, folks. All right. So
that's the senile old guy.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Trying to play the, I'm just a kid and all good and stuff and really causing more damage and death than Jigsaw ever could, you know, because he also has a lot of time on his hands after the second movie, regardless. Anyways, folks, happy holidays. Of course, this is the holiday season. Get close to your loved ones. Reach out if you have problems, of course. Try not to get too much into the eggnog. A little bit's okay, but not too much. And with that, we will let you guys go. We'll see you next week.
Hey guys, real quick. I am going to go ahead and drop a trailer for Console Combat before this episode. Really hope you guys enjoy it. Thanks.
Hello, gamers. Are you ready to dive into a video game podcast unlike any other? Then look no further. Welcome to Console Combat. I'm John.
And I'm Dean. We're here to give you the info on the latest releases, upcoming titles, and everything else that's making waves in the gaming universe.
That's right, Dean. But that's not all we do here at Console Combat. Each week, we'll put two video game characters against each other in our epic battle simulator, Cortex. After a brief speculation, Cortex ultimately determines who would emerge victorious by running 1,000 battles in its adopted Monte Carlo simulator.
Who has the mightiest punch, the fastest speed, or the most cunning strategy? On Console Combat, we'll put that to the test. Essentially, we're a multiversal Super Smash Bros. Style podcast.
So whether you're a casual player or a hardcore gaming enthusiast, there's something for everyone here at Console Combat. So grab your controllers, strap in, and let's get ready for some action.